Welcome to episode 76 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tamma Frank. Today, I'm bringing you an interview that can be a little bit horrifying. It is with Daniel Lemon, who is the author of a book called Manipurated, which is about, as he puts it, the shady world of ratings and reviews. He also has a podcast of the same name, and I actually first met him when he interviewed me on his show to talk about PeopleShock, my new book. And if you're interested in that episode, you can check it out at http://bit.ly/manipurated-Tamma. So MANIPURATED-Tamma, TEMMA. We all know that ratings and reviews are hugely important. Most people do look at them before buying anything major these days. And it's pretty scary to discover how very much they are gamed and manipulated. In today's interviews, Daniel gives you some ideas about how to deal with cranky customers and fraudulent reviews. Ultimately, he says, it boils down to starting by offering a great customer experience. I will chat with you briefly at the end of the episode.
Daniel Lemon, I'm the head of consulting for Convince and Convert, which is JBear's consulting group and media company. And I am also an author. I wrote a book called Manipurated, which is all about the shady world of ratings and reviews, which is a topic that never fails to incite
interest.
Never quite violence, but interest at least.
Yeah. Well, and ratings and reviews are one of those things that are just so many businesses live or die based on those.
Yeah, true.
So just quickly first, what inspired you to write that book?
It's the book itself is written in kind of a small business mindset rather than all business. I really kind of honed in on small businesses because people don't often think about small business owners or medium sized business owners. And in part that was because a friend of mine in Los Angeles, he had a hair salon and just went through the whole gamut of awful rating and review related experiences. Pushy salespeople, crazy customers leaving error-filled reviews, everything a business owner experiences, he did. And it kind of sent me back to the early part of my career. I was at Google on their PR team and got exposed to all manner of those shady characters in the SEO world, sort of black hat folks. And I realized that their tactics have changed. This is the same crowd of characters. Their tactics have shifted. So,
but it seems to me there's a difference between pushy salespeople and cranky customers versus shady SEO. Those are different categories.
Different categories, but it all adds up to basically a cohesive problem with the whole industry.
Okay.
And in some cases, the things are connected kind of under the radar in a way that maybe isn't so obvious to people.
Can you elaborate?
Yeah, sure. So one of the big concepts that I discovered, it's an old SEO concept. If you've been around in the search optimization industry, probably already familiar with it, but it's this concept of fresh content, the importance of fresh content. Something Google cares about, something Yelp cares about, TripAdvisor, in part because Google is still their kingmaker. It is Yelp's number one source of site traffic, probably TripAdvisor's number one source of site traffic as well. And Google really cares about the freshness of content on a page more than almost anything else.
Right.
And in part because it indicates some level of helpfulness about that page. If stuff is freshly updated, it's probably not a link farm or a spam farm.
Okay.
And so Yelp plays that freshness game very aggressively. So does TripAdvisor, so does Angie's List, all of the rating and review companies. They're playing that freshness game in part to gain favor with Google. and so in some
although
cases,
also, you know, if I'm looking for reviews, I want recent reviews.
Sure. It really is all hinging on this concept of freshness, and you can use it to your advantage as a business, or it can be used against you to your disadvantage.
Right.
And sometimes that pushy salespeople thing comes into play. People feel like they're being pushed into some kind of a decision on, do I play game the game with Yelp or TripAdvisor or someone, or not.
So what do you mean when you say pushy salespeople? Selling what?
I'll give you the example of my friend, and I've heard this story so many times. They get a sales call from someone at Yelp, and they say, you know, hey, I was looking at your Yelp profile, and you've got a 3-star business here. We really think you need to get more reviews on your page. We can't really help you with that, but we can help you optimize your profile, make sure your hours are up to date, maybe run some special offers that might be interesting to people, and that's gonna help you grow your business.
Right.
But if you don't do it, we can't really promise what's going to happen.
Ooh, that sounds like a veiled threat.
That's sort of the... In some cases, they actually will say that, and in other cases, just an implied kind of statement. But, you know, for a small business owner who is... What do they deal with on a daily basis? They have to take out the trash. They have to stock the shelves. They have to, you know, answer the phone. This is another thing they have to think about, and it feels like they're being pushed into a decision.
Right.
And they don't know the value of it. They just know that, you know, that's kind of the place where people are finding me. So now, right, I feel like I have to pay the piper.
Huh.
And it's not always... I haven't really ever been convinced that being on Yelp and paying to be on Yelp is beneficial to a business.
Really? Can you talk a bit more about that? Because obviously a lot of people do look at Yelp, mm-hmm, and Yelp reviews. So what makes you think that it's not...
I think it's the... I should clarify, it's the paying to be on Yelp aspect.
Okay.
So paying Yelp for access to those special offers and those other pieces.
Right.
I've not seen a business say, that's really working well for me. That said, a focus and a commitment to Yelp or any review site, not just have to be Yelp, is good for the business because it demonstrates a commitment to the customer experience, which is... at the end of the day, what every business should be focused on.
So that's one thought that occurred to me when you talked about your friend and the pushy salespeople, but also customers saying things that he felt weren't true. Maybe they were true. Like, customers do complain sometimes and have a very different perception from the business owner.
Right.
So what are your thoughts about that?
Well,
I'm not asking you to comment specifically on your friend.
Yeah, for him... You know, you have this knee-jerk reaction. You want to set the record straight. I mean, that's not the way that went down. That's not what happened. And I get it. I mean, that's how I would react, too. But the truth is, other customers don't want to see you behave that way. It doesn't reflect well on the business. And it's not really going to help you solve that problem. So, you know, I always coach the business owners to come from kind of a place of empathy and say, you know, I'm really sorry you had that experience. I welcome you to get back in touch with me or contact me, and I will do anything I can to make it right for you.
Right.
So the thing about that, if the customer is truly, truly angry, you may not fix it. Mm-hmm. They may be lost to you forever, but that story persists forever. And other customers will see that
you tried
this person
to solve
tries
it
really hard.
Yeah.
And that's about all you can expect.
Yeah.
People have bad days. That's the way it goes. And so I think... The opportunity is to, back to that concept of freshness, like, well, I can use this as an opportunity or I can see it as a threat. Maybe if I respond to this review and use it as an opportunity, I can get more reviews, more customers coming in, and that will help me be a bit more defensive or offensive about this
right,
whole situation rather than playing offense all the time. Playing defense all the time allows me to play offense instead.
Right.
So, obviously, I'm not good with the sports analogies.
It's okay. I'm not a sports person either. When we chatted last night, you told me a horror story about a company that suddenly had like 150 one-star reviews come up. Can you talk about that? That was an amazing story.
Yeah, it's a terrifying story. It's a company in Boston. It's called Long's Jewelers. I think they have 5 stores in Boston. They've been around for 100-some years. They're a long history. They love their customers. Their customers love them. They're a very beloved institution in Boston, and they're in the jewelry business. So for any business, really, but for jewelry, the holidays is a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know what their percentage of sales is, but I would guess it's at least double digits. It's probably a huge percent of their annual sales volume is over the holidays. And what happened to them in December, they really lean on Facebook more than Yelp or some of the other sites. They really focus on Facebook. And they were, I think they had a 4.5-star profile on Facebook, about 400 reviews, 400 or 500. It's pretty robust.
Mm-hmm.
And the digital marketing person woke up one morning, went to work, checked the Facebook page, and they overnight had gotten 150-some one-star reviews.
Whoa, overnight.
Overnight, that took their rating from 4.5 to, like, 2.
Whoa.
And this is the beginning of December, right at peak sales season.
Oh, boy.
So she, to her credit, Linnell, she did not panic. She didn't sort of burn the house down and say, I don't know what to do here. She went through a very methodical approach. Included trying to contact Facebook, got nowhere, which I found of the whole story. Okay, the fact they got the reviews was pretty terrifying, but the way it was handled by Facebook was just terrible. I mean,
so Facebook
said
didn't...
nothing.
Hmm.
You don't think 150 one-star reviews is in any way suspicious?
That's ridiculous. Of course that's suspicious.
And it wasn't like 1% of their reviews. It was a huge percent.
Right.
So she got nowhere with Facebook. That would be the logical first step.
Yeah.
And so, kind of desperate, she turned to this website called inbound.org. It's mm-hmm. a great resource for marketing. It's basically a discussion board for marketing people, digital marketing people in particular. And she found a person on there to help her, someone who was sensitive to the issue and said, I will help you figure this out. And so through a series of kind of back and forth with that person, what they discovered was, of course, they were fake. I mean, that was no surprise to anyone.
Right.
But they suspect it was one of their competitors who had posted it. Just the tone and the tenor of the reviews, it was like, this place is terrible. You should go down the street and check out its competitor.
Gee, how suspicious. Yeah.
They strongly suspected
right.
it was coming from a competitor.
Yeah.
And that someone else on Inbound had a backdoor contact at Facebook. They got in touch with them, and they finally, this was several days into this process, started slowly taking them down. And so their star rating went, you know, started ticking back up.
Mm-hmm.
They did a couple of smart things. First was going to a network of peers like Inbound. I think that's
right.
a great way to get help. They also made a PR stunt out of it and posted on their Facebook page that this happened and got tons
yeah.
and tons of, like, an outpouring of
support.
Emotional support for
yeah.
their company. And they contacted someone at the New York Times. And he saw the whole thread on the Inbound site and got totally into the story. He ended up writing about it. So
wow.
They made it into a somewhat positive experience, but it is terrifying. I mean, this is not a small, you know, fly-by-night operation, and the fact that happened and still Facebook says, sorry.
That's the part that just blows my mind away. Why would they not have taken that seriously?
It's common on Yelp, on Facebook. I don't hear it as much on TripAdvisor, but I have heard that complaint with them. They just don't care. They take a very agnostic view and say, we are the bulletin board. You know, we don't control what's posted. We don't control what's taken down. We are just a bulletin board. We're in the cork business. We're not in the posting and managing of posting business.
But the reality is, even bulletin boards, usually the person whose wallet's on exercises some control.
Correct.
And if truly abusive things are up there, they take it down.
Yep. Yeah, it is... It's a black mark on the... of all of the things, I think it points to a lack of governance.
Yeah.
A lack of consistent standards across these sites. I think that's a step that at some point...
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., we have the Federal Trade Commission, and I think that in Canada, it's the CTSC or the Trade Commission here. Kind of fair trade folks.
Yeah, I think province by province. Yeah.
You know, I think there will be some action taken at some point to... clarify a set of rules. Is, you know, this is how you're not going to control how consumers behave, but
no.
you can certainly control how the sites who host this stuff react to it. I think it's kind of incumbent on them to do it, actually.
How common are fraudulent reviews?
It varies. And it varies by sites. Some sites, for example, on TripAdvisor, I don't know, do you use TripAdvisor?
Not as much as I used to, but because
yeah.
I did find that often it seemed gamed.
They I think they had a problem with
Booking.com seems better generally.
Good thing with Booking.com, it's a verified transaction.
Exactly.
And same with Expedia.
OpenTable.
Yeah, OpenTable. These are all commerce platforms. So,
right.
So it's at least a transaction took place.
Yeah.
TripAdvisor is pivoting to that model.
They are.
In the sense that they have a partnership with American Express.
Okay.
If you connect your TripAdvisor account and your American Express account, if you happen to have both, when American Express sees a hotel charge on your bill, it'll say, hey, we think you stayed at the Marriott in Toronto. Would you like to leave a review on TripAdvisor?
Okay.
And then it gets marked on TripAdvisor of an American Express partnership.
Okay.
So they're moving toward the sort of verified review. I think all sites are going to do that eventually.
I think Yelp
will have to.
Yeah.
They'll have to come up with some model of redemption code on a receipt or...
Something.
Some way. Because without it, you're really depending on the democratic nature of the web.
Right. Which was a nice idea, but...
I say that with a heavy dose of skepticism. Right.
Right.
Not really democratic.
Yeah. So what about, I mean, retailers, for instance? I just spent the last few days at a retail conference. And they're all talking about the importance of reviews, because before people buy products, they want reviews.
Mm-hmm.
But most retailer sites, with the exception of Amazon, have such a small number of reviews that the numbers are meaningless.
Yep.
Do you have any thoughts on how retailers can get more reviews?
There are some tactical playbook things, like emailing past customers and inviting them to write a review, that are obvious place to start. In a lot of cases, customers just don't care. I mean, mm-hmm. it may be a low-interest category. Batteries, for example. You order a pack of Duracell batteries, and you get them, and you open them, and you're like, great, batteries. I'm not going to go review a battery.
Right.
But if they reminded me to do it, I might. Probably still wouldn't, but the next time I was on their site, it prompted me again. Last time you were here, you bought batteries. Would you like to review those?
Yeah.
How did they work out for you? So, you know, there's kind of in the sort of deal flow of commerce, mm-hmm. some ways to make reviews a little bit easier.
Right.
So, you know, high interest category, hotel, that kind of stuff, more likely you'll get a review out of that.
Right.
If you're selling shoelaces, you might have a tougher time with it.
Now, with Amazon, I know that certainly for books, and I don't know if they do it for all their marketplace items, there's a verified purchaser
mm-hmm.
marking. Is that weighted differently, or?
It is. You can still game it.
Okay. So how do you do that?
Yeah, there's...
Not that I should be telling people how you do that, but...
Well, I'll tell you specifically.
Yeah.
There's a young lady I interviewed. Her case study is in my book. She writes fake reviews for a living. This is her life's work.
And she was willing to talk about it.
She is, yeah. She told me, actually two people told me their story. And hers was the more compelling of the two, so I used it. What she does on Amazon, she'll strike a deal. She sells her services on this website called Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R.
Yeah.
It's $5. You buy a pack of 10 reviews, $50. She'll mm-hmm. write whatever you want her to say. Almost anywhere you want her to say it. And if it's a product on Amazon, you have to pay her to go buy it and reimburse her for it, so then she gets compensated for it. She doesn't ever use the product, and it's not like she's getting a reviewer's copy of a shoelace or something. She will take it. Sometimes she'll use it, but often she says she just donates it or throws it away, and she'll write your reviews. And then by the time she's received it, the review's already live. So it's been marked, verified. That's kind of her magic, and that's sort of the way you do it. Amazon does give those more weight, but they've also gone after that whole industry of people very aggressively. They sued like 1,200 of them last October, I think.
Wow.
I don't know that that's ever going to go anywhere, but it's kind of this the realization you come to when you look at it. It's like the whole thing is so wrought with problems. First of all, why does someone not fix this?
Yeah.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah.
And number two, why do people trust it? That's the biggest problem, is mm-hmm. people trust reviews more than their aunt or their mother. I mean, that they say this is the number one source of information.
Yeah.
And yet we all know how fake they are. So what does that say about us? I don't know. It's like an existential...
So, do you have any sense of how many reviews something would have to have before you could feel confident that it would have washed out the fake ones?
I mean, for me, I always take a pulse. If it's a shoelace or something, I don't frankly care.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not that focused of a purchase of a consumer. But if it's a big enough item, I'll look at 5 or 10 reviews. Most consumers actually look at 5 or 10. So I think every platform has its own thresholds. But unless it's a brand new item, if something doesn't have a lot of reviews, I might second guess my purchase of it.
I tend to go and look at sort of the middle, like the 3-star things, and see what did they see as the positives and negatives.
Yeah.
Because if they're ravingly happy or totally grumpy, odds are it was a fluke.
They're either fake. Maybe it's a terrible product, or it was fake.
Yeah.
And that's a big possibility. Very few things are that amazing that they're all 5 stars. I mean, I can't think of much in my life.
But right.
We all have different thresholds, I guess.
So what would you advise businesses in terms of what strategies they should take towards getting reviews and making sure they're good and even tracking them?
I think on a very strategic level, it starts with a good customer experience. And that could be with the product.
That's
or...
great to my ears.
I mean, if you don't fundamentally have a good product, you're going to get bad reviews.
Right, and you don't deserve good reviews.
You don't deserve good reviews. So
a good product or good service.
That's a question to ask yourself. Is my product good enough to get a 3.5 or 4-star review?
Right.
That's the first. The second is be proactive about it. Don't wait for the bad review to happen and then get involved. Seek out reviews because they become marketing opportunities. You're going to get bad reviews no matter what you do. Might as well get them over with. Kind of get them under your belt and move on and not wait for that moment of panic. And when a bad review does happen, don't panic.
Yeah.
You know, everybody gets them. Even the most beloved brands in the world get bad reviews. It happens. Can't please everyone.
There was a story, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, a year or two ago about a hotel that wanted to start charging customers for bad reviews.
Yes. There's been a couple of those. We actually have in the U.S., we have this legislation in different states called anti-SLAPP. And I failed at SLAPP. That's S-A-L-P-P. I don't remember what that stands for, but it's basically anti-defamation clause. You say, if you defame me, I'm going to either charge you for it or sever our contract. So you can't do that as my customer. And most states are moving to ban that practice because you can't.
Yeah.
We have free speech.
Yeah.
You know, you can't tell a customer not to say something mean about you.
Right.
And businesses, I think they don't like that. It makes them feel even less in control. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, most people are pretty fair. Which kind of points to the importance of always asking for a review. Most people are pretty fair. And in particular, if they're prompted to write a review, they may be even likely to be more fair. They think, well, you know, it's like a 3.5-star. And that's good. You know, I always shop there. They're nice people. Maybe better things to be had out in the world, but I'll give them 3.5 stars.
What do you find provides the greatest incentive for customers to provide reviews? I mean, good service, obviously.
But. Yeah, it depends on the business. I've had small businesses tell me the personal story is a great way to say, you know, I'm a small business owner. I love seeing you every week. I would love more customers just like you.
Okay.
If you left me a review, I'm sure it would be very helpful to other people. And that to me would compel me to write a review.
Yep.
You know, if you're the Sheraton Hotel, that approach might be a little
disingenuous.
Yeah. And so in that case, you know, they just simply ask in multiple different cases. When you check out, you might get a card that says review us. You might get an email, review us. You might get another email that says review us.
Yeah.
They're going to attempt that multiple times and hopefully eventually they convert, you know, a small percentage of them to reviews.
How common is it for businesses to try and offer incentives or rewards for reviews?
It's somewhat common. It's a dangerous practice. It has to be done very carefully.
Okay.
I have seen it go sideways pretty quick. My veterinarian, for example, where I take my dog to, last time I was there, I noticed on the bill if you've been to a vet, I mean, the bills are surprisingly large.
Yes.
At the bottom, it said, you know, if you leave us a 5-star review on Yelp, you'll get $10 off your next visit.
Huh.
And I said to the office manager, I was like, you know, I love you guys, and I will leave you a 5-star review. I don't want my $10 discount because that's shady. But if Yelp finds out you're doing that, they're gonna come down on you hard.
Right.
And they had no idea.
Right.
They thought that was just what you did. And so I think they changed it to if you
leave a review, yeah,
we'll give you a discount, which is a different way of saying it. I think it's still a little questionable. But, the actual exchange of money or product for a review is a little bit dodgy.
Yeah.
Technically, at least in the U.S., the person receiving it then has to disclose, I got this thing for free, or I got compensated to write this review.
Right.
And
yes.
Most consumers don't know that.
No.
I mean, a blogger or an influencer, a reporter, they know it. An average consumer doesn't know that.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I would ask that. And in some cases, if you're asking someone random to review you on Yelp, Yelp may not care about them. So you're just throwing away, you know, all that that effort, plus the risk of getting caught if you do it.
What do you mean Yelp may not care about them?
If they don't know enough about that reviewer, if they're new on Yelp or they don't really review stuff, Yelp will derank or even delist that review and move it to this other category of reviews not currently recommended, which is where the vast majority of reviews seem to end up, particularly good ones. That's likely to happen. So they really prefer people who are Yelpers, active on Yelp.
Okay.
Versus a site like TripAdvisor, where it's just done in alphabetical or in date order.
Right.
It's reversed chronological order, and that's the way their algorithm works. Yelp is a little bit different that way. Every site's got its own peculiarities on that.
Hmm. Are there any other things that I should have asked you that I haven't?
I mean, given your background on customer experience, The most important thing I learned from the businesses I talk to who do this stuff right, it isn't so much that they have amazing customers or an amazing product. They don't. What they do have is a good experience. They're very customer-focused. So I think for me, the bigger message is take good care of your customer.
Yeah.
And in turn, give them a chance to take care of you back.
Right.
And that is an exchange everyone's willing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's so true. I mean, I thought that was a great point about even just suggesting the personal story about why it would mean so much to me if you did leave a review. So, all you folks out there, please go to iTunes, leave a review.
Yes.
Well, it's so frustrating, as you know, as a podcaster, because iTunes does not make it easy to figure out to leave a review.
No. Nor to even read the reviews.
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre.
I don't know how many I have. I mean, I may not even have one.
Yeah, I think I'm up to 11 or something. And of course, being based in Canada, they get split, too.
Right.
So people will see there's some in the U.S., some in Canada.
Well, if you happen to be listening, please leave both of us a review.
Yes. So your podcast is called
Manipurated Podcast, same as the book.
Yep.
Manipurated with an R.
And yes, that took me a moment at first too.
Yeah.
And it's a great podcast, and the book is definitely worth picking up as well. And it's at Amazon, I presume.
It is.
Yep, and all other good retailers. And if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Easy to find. So contact information is in the book, but it's also on my website, manipurated.com. You can email me there or tweet me or whatever.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you.
I've never been particularly happy with the quality of Yelp reviews. And after having listened to this interview with Daniel, I'm beginning to understand why the quality of the reviews that I get on that site are kind of iffy. So personally, I prefer to use other sources that have reviews that can only be put up by people who've actually bought or stayed at the places they're reviewing. So that's why I use Booking.com and OpenTable, for instance, more than most other review sites. That said, unfortunately, a lot of people do use the gameable review sites. And while I do not recommend that you game them, I think Daniel had some really good advice in saying you know, try to make a personal connection with your guests and explain to them why the review is so important to you personally. That will make them much more likely to put in the time to give you a review. The other thing that is a piece of advice that I know I'm going to have to hold deeply in my mind over the coming weeks and months once people start reviewing PeopleShock on Amazon or Goodreads or wherever else is when a bad review happens, don't panic. So far, I am fortunate that the one review I have is a 5-star, but I realize that that's not likely to hold forever. Although, you know, it'd be nice if most of them come out that way. If you do get a copy of PeopleShock and would choose to write a review on Amazon, I would be delighted. Even if you're not a 5-star review, I really just honestly want to know what you think. And likewise, of course, as we mentioned in the interview, getting reviews on iTunes is hugely important to podcasters because it plays a really big role in how prominently iTunes displays a podcast. So if you think that Frank Reactions is a good podcast, it would mean so much to me if you would make the effort, and unfortunately I know it is a bit of an effort, to go over to iTunes, log in, and click to do a review and a rating. That's all I've got for today. I look forward to chatting with you again next week. But in the meantime, if you've got any feedback for me on the podcast, please, as always, feel free to contact me, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com. We're on Twitter at Tema Frank, on LinkedIn, on the Frank Reactions Facebook page. I would love, love, love to hear from you and get your suggestions for what you'd like me to talk about on this show or whether there are any particular people who you think I should be interviewing. Have a fantastic week, and I will chat with you again next week. Bye.